Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFBA. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Town Talk powered this morning by Stafford Tourism. For information on events and activities, visit tourstaffordva.com. tourstaffordva.com. Scott Harris is here, the executive director of UMW Museums. Scott, it is good to see you this morning. Good morning.
Good morning. It's good to see you, Mr. Schubel.
It is you and I both have been on vacation, so we are kind of getting back into it this morning.
Yes, and I don't know if this was intentional, but we went in opposite directions. You went
north
to Canada, I went south to North Carolina.
And that was I wanted to talk to you about over the past week. I have been through a number of historic sites and gone and seen things, and I always have had a great appreciation of what is done and presented here, but after being at some fairly big and historic sites around the country, we do a good job around here. I'll put up our presenters and presentations that you can find in this area up against anybody else.
Well, speaking broadly for all of my colleagues and friends in our museums and historic sites and cultural institutions in Fredericksburg, thank you. And that's through the effort of a lot of people. Mm-hmm. The staff members, the people who are on the various governing boards or authorities, all of the folks with whom we interact in so many ways, in either vendor relationships or certainly, of course, the visitors too. So we are fortunate that the Fredericksburg area's history is America's history, is the history of whether it's the colonial revolutionary era, the period leading up to and resulting terribly in the Civil War Reconstruction and the enduring legacy of civil rights. So we have the experience of the enslaved and black citizens trying to overcome that and thrive as they did many years after. So many other relationships to whether it be Washington or Monroe. Gary Melcher's, we're a founding member at Gary Melcher's Home and Studio of the Historic Artist Home and Studio Coalition. Got to make sure I say that right. Reflective of his influence and work in the arts. And so all of these sites have wonderful stories to tell, great locations. You know, Fredericksburg, Spotsylvania National Military Park, one of the largest Civil War battlefield park sites when you look at all the land area that encompasses. So many different elements of battles throughout the war. Mm-hmm. That's the whole run of it. So, yeah, I think we've got great material to work with, great people involved with it. Yeah, we hold our own, I think.
And, in a lot of cases, you don't have to, if you live around here, and if you haven't gone to some of these sites recently, go on back. Everything is always being updated. The story is always being changed. And you don't always have to go all around the state or the region or the country even. We got some pretty cool stuff around here.
Well, and as we often find, and this has been true at other museums of which I've worked over the years, think about holiday periods. Think about when you have family in, whether it be mm-hmm. Thanksgiving, Christmas, or other times of the year. You've always got a great opportunity to introduce something in your own backyard that is a nationally significant thing, possibly, to people within your family or friend network. And then that helps them learn something and maybe have a wonderful experience. It also helps spread the word. Because for most of our sites and in tourism generally, as our colleagues there will tell you, word of mouth is still, even mm-hmm. in the information age, it's still one of the best ways that people get referrals. And still word of mouth, even if it's through Twitter or through Facebook or other social media or just communicating online. How people make their travel decisions and the places they visit is very much influenced by people they know or have heard about. So it's still great to be able to have word of mouth.
Yeah. So anyway, we have some very cool stuff around here. Quick break. We'll come back and jump into it. Lots of events taking place especially at Gary Melcher's Home and Studio at Belmont. We will talk about that and also the James Monroe Museum this morning. UMW Museums, our focus with Scott Harris. More on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230. You can weigh in about today's topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230 and by text at 540-371-5756. Here's your host, Ted Schubel.
It is Scott Harrison this morning, the executive director of UMW Museums. That would be the James Monroe Museum and Gary Melcher's home and studio at Belmont. Before we go any further, we should talk a little bit about those museums, because one of the James Monroe Museum is just, to me, is one of my favorite museums around here, just because there is so much in that little building. You look at that little building and you just think, well, I know what would be in there. Well, you don't. Because there really is. So there are a lot of stories. And whoever names your programs at the James Monroe Museum, hats off to them, because they have done just a terrific job. Every time there's a program, I know I'll be amused by what it's by the title of the program.
Well, thank you. We do strive. It's a collective effort. Various ones of us will come up with things that we think will be something that resonates, because you have to stand out. You have to have something that will pique people's interest and reel them in. The one coming up on August 20th is a good example. Blooming History. And it's going to
be... See, there you go.
Yeah,
Blooming
there
History.
Right there. And I don't own a piece of that at all. That was all the Lindsay Crawford, our public programs coordinator. I can't remember if Jared Kearney, our curator, was in on that one necessarily. We all throw in our ideas and suggestions of what we ought to call something. And Blooming History is a program featuring Centerpiece Boutique and Studio, a little partnership there where people can create their own whimsical designer-cut flower bouquet, inspired by some of our gardens around us here in Virginia, using native blooms. That's a program at 10 a.m. on August 20th. Now, that is a fee-based program. It's $40 because there's a certain amount of material that has to be acquired to do it. But like any of the programs going on at James Monroe, if you email Lindsay Crawford, our public programs person, that's L Crawford, you leave the D off, LCRAWFOR, at umw.edu. You can reserve a spot. You can also go to the Facebook page of the museum website, see information about that program, other ones coming up, and look at some of the past programs to get a sense of what we do, whether it's some history trivia, sketchy history, which is our version of win, lose, or draw, other kinds of programming that go on around the year. As we get into the fall, the academic season, we'll have some more lecture-based programs, both online and in person. This is the bicentennial year for the issuance of the Monroe Doctrine by President James Monroe, his message to Congress in December of 1823 that put Europe on notice to not interfere in the affairs of nations in the Western Hemisphere. So we will be doing programming in November and December that commemorates that really vital foreign policy statement that governed how the United States acted in this hemisphere for, well, still has overtones, even today. But yeah, we try to come up with program titles that will help people understand what the content is, but maybe give them a little bit of a nudge as to taking part in it.
I missed the bookbinding class that was in July, I think, but it was Bound in Rebellion.
Yes.
Again, just because of the name, I wanted to go to that, go and do something with that program.
Right. I mean, during the run up to the actual shooting part of the Revolution, the Revolutionary War, the American Revolution was about a lot of things. It was about how to revolt against, rebel against different policies and impose taxes by the British government on the American colonists, and one of them, the Stamp Act, was one of the most famous, one of the most infamous, and every kind of printed item, whether it be playing cards, legal documents, deeds, letters, or books, had to have a stamp duty paid. You paid literally to put a stamp on the item. And so colonists began to figure out how to bind their own books. And it was both a way of having the reading matter they wanted, and it was an act of rebellion. So bound in rebellion. That one just sort of evolved. We went back and forth with about five or six different titles trying to think, okay, what do we call it? And that one just sort of emerged. A lot of times that'll happen. We'll talk about these things for a while, and just like cream separating, usually the really good part will come to the top, and there's the title. Let's go.
Well, the James Monroe Museum has one of the great features of it is just the artifacts you have. I mean, it's like going into it literally is going into a James Monroe section of the Smithsonian with all the good stuff that you have there. And that's what makes it you're always changing exhibits up, and there is stuff there that you're not going to see anywhere else.
That's true, and you said it earlier. You did use the word, and it's the L word. It's little, the S word, small. We have a small space there. We have a small space in which to tell big stories, as I like to say.
And yeah.
So that is a challenge. That is one way in which, whether it be through virtual programming or other uses of technology, we try to expand the intellectual envelope, even if we can't expand the physical envelope all the time. So we try to use technology in ways that support and enhance our ability to tell those stories, to show those artifacts, without letting it get in the way. You can get too tech heavy sometimes too, just as you can get too wordy. And we've talked about the fact that we need to, and we're beginning a process of revamping our exhibits in a way that will hopefully give people an even better way to go through and understand, for us to increasingly tackle topics that we have not traditionally had not received as much attention, whether it be Indian removal, relations between the Native American groups and the Monroe administration and within his era. Same way with Black history, we've continued to try to push for ways to do a better job in engaging on that. And actually, we have a great resource in the James Farmer Multicultural Center at UMW as a program partner. And it's been one of the nice ways that we can work within and do our part to help advance the UMW educational mission while having an additional partner and platform upon which to expand our programming at the museum, too.
Well, Scott, I think I have learned a whole lot more about Monroe than I just knew some of the basics, but through you and through the museum and the different programs that you do, and in the fact that he really was one of the main players and was based here is
that's right. I mean, he's
kind of unique.
Westmoreland County,
right,
within the region, within the planning district.
Yes, right.
Before there was a planning district, but no, he was very much a product of this part of Virginia. And even though he worked and lived all over different parts of the country, all over the world, and his diplomatic postings, he represented all of what was within his time, I think, certainly good and well respected of being part of the Virginia tradition of leadership in our early republic. When you look at the term, the Virginia dynasty, he's the concluding president of the first four, or the four of our first five presidents were from Virginia. John Adams, this was long for the ride there. And so Monroe does come in and is the cleanup man for the Virginia dynasty in that respect. And his career bridges the colonial period in which he was born and came up in through the revolutionary early national period right up to, with the Missouri Compromise, the opening rounds of what would be ultimately the slide toward the Civil War. And so there's a really critical point in history in which his career is there. The fact he interacted with so many other contemporaries that in some respects are better known or had careers that predated or postdated his while overlapping also puts him in very interesting company. But we also, in looking at all those features, also frankly look at where, as we examine the legacies of our history and how we continue to confront issues relative to that, we try to put Monroe in a proper critical perspective. And there are some folks that don't want to look at the past in a critical way. They want to sort of enshrine it in amber and consider it sacrosanct. But every society goes through evolutions in how it considers the past and how it understands what the past tells us about the present. So I think we're very much a part of that in how we approach Monroe.
The other thing that I find really interesting of how you approach Monroe is that you tell the story of, because if we just read the stories out of the books, this is where I think you've really educated me, because you've just talked about in the interpersonal relationships between Jefferson and Monroe in Washington and how they all didn't get along, and they didn't get along well at all at times.
Well, at times. I mean, Jefferson, Madison, Monroe, and that was the order in which they were presidents, they did have a very close relationship going back to the time of the American Revolution. Jefferson sort of the older brother kind of figure in some respects, and Madison and Monroe somewhat younger, both sort of his protégés, and later his colleagues in various combinations in state and federal government. They largely were pretty close through their lives, but it's telling at key moments where there was a rupture, usually because of either some conflict in approaching political office or mm-hmm. in resolving diplomatic issues in which Monroe was involved, and either with Jefferson as president or Madison as his Secretary of State, there were points at which Monroe particularly felt that he was not supported, perhaps ill-used, his honor might have been compromised, and so there were brief ruptures, but ultimately they concluded their lives with friendship and great deal of harmony in their relationship. So it's like any relationship. There are going to be high points and low points, but they were a very big factor in each other's lives for many years, and it had an effect on our history.
Was it Washington and Monroe that had kind of a falling out?
Washington and Monroe had a terrible falling out because, I do a whole program on this one. Washington, as a general, was sort of the paragon for Monroe in so many ways, the ideal leader. And yet Monroe also seeking to make his way forward, trying to find some patronage, some way of getting his own regiment. Washington tried to help. Not a lot occurred because it was very hard to recruit troops by that point in the Revolution. The ones that were going to volunteer had already volunteered, and it was actually hard to get men into the army. So it's really politically, when Monroe is in Congress, when he is a very vocal Republican, Democratic, Jeffersonian Republican, Washington is at the head of what's really become a Federalist government, Alexander Hamilton's party shaping in that period. And it led to diplomatic schisms and political schisms that put a wedge in the Washington-Monroe relationship that never really healed before Washington died. And there's a lot to unpack on that. That could be a whole show about that relationship, because I think in Monroe's case, it is both the professional and the personal in terms of how his relationship went with Washington and how he echoed Washington later in his own presidency in some ways too.
The papers of James Monroe. Part of UMW.
Yes, that's part of our university museum's division, department, whatever we consider it, cohort. Papers of James Monroe, the publication project that began at William & Mary and then long ago moved to Mary, Washington, is the effort to do an annotated, selective collection of Monroe's official and personal correspondence. Bob Karachuk is our editor. Heidi Stello is both the associate editor there and also the archivist of the James Monroe Museum. And she portrays Mrs. Monroe, Elizabeth Courtright Monroe, for us in museum programs. So she's got triple threat there. The papers is marching its way through, working on volume 8 of a projected 10 volumes of correspondence and other papers related to Monroe. All of them now and in the future, the whole set will be available at Rotunda, the digital imprint of the University of Virginia. So we have both the print editions that have been coming out for years, and now we have it accessible online as well.
So again, there's lots to see and do. And even though it's a small building, I'm not one that reads a lot of signs and it reads a lot of the stuff, but There's a lot to see, and some really great history over in Charles Street.
Remind me not to ride in a car with you then.
Again, blooming history is at the James Monroe Museum, and the date is
August 20th.
Okay,
at 10 a.m. So again, L Crawford, LCRAWFOR at umw.edu. You can find out more. You can reserve your spot for this program. A decorating program with roots, if you'll pardon the pun, in some of our great local gardens in the area.
And I guess it's too late. The crepe myrtles have bloomed and they're no longer as pink as it was.
I think they're still pretty pink, but they are the blossoms are dropping now. We have a beautiful crepe myrtle in the garden of the museum, which if you go to our Facebook page, you can see it in all its glory as photo. It's really a magnificent picture that Lindsay took just at the right moment with that wonderful tree. And all the crepe myrtles this year look really good everywhere, I think.
Yeah, it has.
But ours is the best.
Scott Harris, the executive director of UMW Museums here. We've been talking about the James Monroe Museum. We will switch gears and talk about Gary Melcher's home and studio at Belmont in Stafford when we come back. Town Talk powered by Stafford Tourism this morning. For information on events and activities, tourstaffordva.com. More on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It is now coming up on 8:30.
From the Fredericksburg.today online news studios, this is News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting station focused on Fredericksburg. This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. And now, here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Scott Harrison this morning, the executive director of UMW Museums, the James Monroe Museum on Charles Street in downtown Fredericksburg, and Gary Melcher's home and studio at Belmont in Stafford. Again, for those who haven't been to Gary Melcher's, lots of stuff there. You've got grounds, you've got art, you've got just a lot of things. I always tell the story that the hardest thing for me was, and now there are signs that can get you there. 10, 15 years ago, MC Morris had to basically drive me there because I always would say I didn't know how to get there. But you can't use that excuse anymore because there are signs on 95, there are signs on 17, there are signs all over.
Well, and you can use like Google Maps.
Google
Navigator or whatever. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're like so many places around here, you've got to navigate a road system, which can sometimes be challenging certain parts of the day or times of the year anyway. And we are tucked in there in Falmouth. In what is a wonderful enclave there in Falmouth, Virginia, and up on the hill where the historic Belmont Estate had been since the late 18th century, and Gary Melcher's American artist made it his home with his wife Corinne in 1916, and then ultimately at her passing in 1955, she left it to the Commonwealth of Virginia, and we've operated it since 1975 the home and studio. Principally, the mission is to talk about Gary Melcher's career, both his art and his arts advocacy that both he and his wife supported in not only his career as a working artist, but helping establish the Smithsonian American Art Museum, the Virginia Museum of Fine Arts, others, different organizations that were supportive of the arts that they were involved in. But we also have the story, and we continue to explore ways to tell more of that, the history prior to the Melchers, the different owners who had the land, built the property, the Ficklin family being the longest tenure there from the 1830s until the time when the Melchers bought the property in 1916, was in that Ficklin family. So we want to be able to talk more about them, about the enslaved workforce there that helped put up, that did the work that made the place that the Melchers decided to buy in 1916. So there are those stories. Plus, as you say, the walking trails, the natural history, the dinosaur tracks that are in the stones that make up the garden paths. So we've got a lot of different things. John Smith even visited within the general area of Belmont as part of his exploration up the Rappahannock in 1608. We have a medallion in the ground that commemorates that. And a little bit of Civil War history. We're in that area of immediate Falmouth area where there was some Civil War activity, particularly in 1862.
You were part of a History at Sunset for the National Park Service a few years ago.
Yes, John Hennessy, our friend and colleague, retired now from the Park Service, did a great program that looked at the different aspects of the war as it related to the Belmont property. No actual fighting there, possibly some movement of artillery in some area there during the April 1862 skirmishing that John famously called the Battle of Arby's, because there's no physical remnant of it anywhere anymore.
Right.
But it was an occasion for the Union Army to occupy part of that ground for a while, and the Ficken family had to live with that situation, being, from their perspective, on the wrong side of the river once the bridges, including bridges Ficklin owned, were burned over the Rappahannock. So it is a story of what the war was like for one family caught sort of in that crossfire of the war. But it and the dinosaur footprints I mentioned, the fact that we have wonderful gardens and have interactions with the history of gardening and some of the people that the Melchers knew, they all contribute to parts of our story and contribute to a book series that we have organized for the fall.
Nicely done there to
Thank you.
Swerve into that, because
it
is. I
circled the airport for a minute, but
yes,
I found a runway.
I wondered how we were going to get into that, and you handled it perfectly.
Yeah, I should have let you bring it up, but hey, whatever. Yeah, sometimes you make your own luck. Yes.
Yes, you do.
We are excited at Gary Melcher's home and studio. We're introducing a speaker and book signing series this fall called Books at Belmont. You know, talk about, again, how do these titles come up, these programs?
Books at Belmont.
That
like
one
it.
Pretty quickly is like, hey, why don't we call it Books at Belmont?
Yeah.
We have three really interesting speakers. These will be second Sundays in September, October, and November. And I will read briefly what they're going to be. Sunday, September 10th at 3 o'clock. They're all at 3 o'clock p.m. We have the acclaimed cultural landscape historian and writer Mac Griswold. She will share insights from her latest book, I'll Build a Stairway to Paradise, A Life of Bunny Mellon. Bunny Mellon, the wife of Paul Mellon, the fabulously rich couple who did so much to endow art museums and were such tremendous collectors of some amazing art, most of it in public institutions now. Bunny was also a gardener, self-taught but highly refined in her abilities. She really was the creative force behind the White House Rose Garden during the Kennedy administration, and other stunning gardens. And so her work and all the different interactions within her life is something that Mac Griswold was an eyewitness to for a large part of it. Mac went to school with Bunny Mellon's daughter. Remained close to Mrs. Mellon. Well, she lived, you know, to be about 100, close to it. So there was a lot of sort of insider perspective that Mac brought to this. Mac and I are colleagues on the editorial board of the White House History Quarterly magazine, and so we've known each other for a while now through that. And once this book came out, we thought that would be just a great title to have. excuse me. So that will be our first Book at Belmont lecture, Sunday, September 10th at 3 p.m. And then Sunday, October 8th at 3 p.m., we have a local well-known author and historic preservationist, Donald Fance, worked for the National Park Service as a historian for three Civil War parks and has written 9 books on Civil War topics. He will share his latest publication, Fredericksburg, A Comprehensive Civil War Guide. And particularly in his talk, we'll focus on some of the Stafford County elements to that. Again, not a battle per se in Stafford County other than the 1862 skirmish, but there are other activities that he'll comment on there. So that's the second book at Belmont. The third one will be Sunday, November 12th at 3 p.m. Carly Mae Jansen, Mae Jansen, a science education master's degree holder, was first inspired to write her book about dinosaurs for her science classes many years ago, but she was motivated to finish it for her children. And so she'll share her kid-friendly lesson on dinosaurs and a series of books called A Dinosaur Made Me, in which she has different situations in which dinosaurs are woven into a story for children. And then we will encourage people after the event to stay and look for the fossils of dinosaurs, the footprints of them, in our garden paths. Gary Melcher has acquired local stone from places like Mansfield and Spotsylvania County for his work there, and they're just filled with dinosaur tracks. So we have a whole guide for people to do. So whether it's gardening and the way of how to shape a landscape to a high degree, whether it's the Civil War legacy of the area, whether it's the prehistoric legacy, we have three very interesting takes, three authors who will be speaking and talking about their books, and they will be signing them. The books may be purchased at the museum store at Gary Melcher's Home and Studio or online at garymelchers.org. And if you have questions, you can contact our museum store and visitor center manager, Lindy Lynn, at 654-1843 or LLynn, that's LLynn, at umw.edu. So we're really excited about launching this series this fall.
Yeah, Books at Belmont. And for the last one, you can come for the books, stay for the dinosaurs.
Exactly, that's right.
So, no, but these are all... You do the same at the James Monroe Museum, but making authors and these kinds of talks available are really you bring in interesting people to provide information, and these are good for all ages.
Well, we're fortunate, as we said earlier, you know, there are a number of different stories and topics and things to approach there at Gary Melcher's Home and Studio. These have, in some respects, very little direct relationship to the Melchers story, but they have a relationship to the site. So in a way, we're taking the landscape or the events associated with the region and using those as the jumping off point toward these books and this kind of a program. One of the things Mrs. Melchers, Corinne Melchers, wanted in leaving the property to the Commonwealth was that it remain a public resource. They were great for entertaining there and having different activities. And so things like this, things like the Art After Hours concert series that we've done for years are another manifestation of that. We will, in fact, be doing our last Art After Hours concert of the summer on August 10th, this coming Thursday, with the Rappahannock Choral Society. That's 6 to 8 p.m. On the grounds of Gary Melcher's Home and Studio, free parking, food trucks, craft beer, our galleries will be open, the museum store will be open. So it's just another way in which we try to make that site a community resource. We're welcoming the Rappahannock Choral Society for the first time, and we've had a great experience this year with those concerts. We are very grateful for the sponsorship of Stafford Tourism through its sponsorship program to help us do that. So another nice way to enjoy the site there. Obviously, coming to learn more about Gary Melcher's career, to see the art, to see the historic house and the way the Melchers left it, really, are the principal mission of the site. But we have so many other subjects we can get into and things to do there.
Wow, the Rappahannock Choral Society, they're doing a concert. That's going to be that's going to be a special occasion.
I think so. We've worked with them when we had the Welsh Festival before, and of course they've been known around the area for a long time. But you know, this year we had Karen Jonas, we had the Fredericksburg Concert Band. We've had in the past Fall Line, which is the great group that Keith Mellinger, the dean at UMW, does his program. So we really enjoy a great variety of performers, musical styles, and we're already working on setting up next year's run, so I think it's going to be great.
So Art After Hours is Thursday, and it starts at
6 p.m.
6 p.m.
Roughly 6 to 8. 6 o'clock is when the music starts.
Okay.
So do try to get there early enough to get your parking and get settled, but it'll be a nice evening of music.
No, just a great backdrop there. With everything. Art After Hours with the Rappahannock Choral Society this Thursday, starting about 6 o'clock at at Gary Melcher's home and studio, Belmont in Stafford County. Town Talk powered by Stafford Tourism this morning. For information on events and activities, visit tourstaffordva.com. We'll wrap it up with a few other loose ends with Scott Harris this morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Download the all-new News Talk 1230 WFVA app for Apple and Android. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. And now, here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Scott Harrison, the Executive Director of UMW Museums, the James Monroe Museum, and Gary Melcher's home and studio at Belmont in Stafford County. One of the great things that someone, I think I know who it is, someone on your staff found this summer from the Detroit News Archives was actual video, not sound, but some video from the Detroit News Archives of Gary Melcher's.
To be technically correct, it was film. Yeah, it was a newsreel.
Yes, it was. You're right.
That would be really amazing. Yeah.
Thank you.
Nerd alert. Yeah,
this is the problem when you have someone, you know, you have a historian and, must we quibble?
Ted Schubel, note to self, never invite Harris back. Yes. Michelle Cordovi on our staff.
I thought it was Michelle.
She has the Google alert for anything Melcher's that pops up. And the Detroit Press, I believe.
Detroit News.
Yeah, that's it. They periodically put out from the archive that they can access various film footage, newsreel types of things.
Yeah.
I think often silent, maybe not always. And in this case, it was the opening of the Detroit Art Institute in 1920, or very early 20s.
Yeah.
And whether or not it had sound originally, what they did, the clip that they published online did not have sound. And it showed various people coming in, and Rodin's The Thinker, and some other famous works here and there. And then it says, little title card comes up, Detroit native artist Gary Melcher showing one of his best works.
Yeah.
And there he is. And it's maybe like 10 seconds of him talking to someone off camera, and then someone comes up and is chatting with him, and you can only wonder. I've often wondered, and we have no way of knowing. I don't think anyone ever commented on this. Having been the son of German immigrants, or of a German immigrant father, certainly, did he have a slight little residual accent? You know, did he have a little German accent?
I think.
Don't know whether he would have
right.
or not. But so we didn't get to hear him, but we did get to see. That's the only film footage we're aware of him, certainly. We also just recently, Joanna Catron, our assistant director and curator there at Gary Melcher's, was doing some research and found a photograph, still photograph, from the late 1930s, I want to say 1938, of Corinne Melcher's, and this is after her husband's death. But she was helping advise through, I think, the Virginia Arts Commission, on the creation and placement of a monument to Thomas J. Jackson, General Stonewall Jackson, at what would become the Manassas National Battlefield Park, which was not going to happen until 1940. So it's still a state effort to put a statue there. So there's this, if you've ever seen it, there's this sort of Superman Wrath of Khan looking Stonewall Jackson astride his horse. And there's a number of local officials there and state officials and Corinne Melcher's present with that statue up there in Manassas. So they pop up here and there in interesting places.
It's interesting that you find that these kinds of things are still out there and you haven't seen it all. So that's always fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think the picture of Corinne at the Mrs. Melcher's at the statue had been in our archive for a while, and it was sort of like rediscovered, just going back through and looking. But certainly the film footage of Gary Melcher's was a new find that just been waiting there almost 100 years or so to be rediscovered. It's
you told me about it. I was on vacation, and I immediately left my family behind, went and found it, and posted it. I was so excited, and I watched it a bunch of times.
And I'm sure they appreciated that devotion to your craft.
They didn't appreciate it as much as they should have. But
yeah, that's the problem, isn't it?
I'm still working on that. Again, at Gary Melcher's home and studio at Belmont on Thursday, Art After Hours, about 6 o'clock, with the Rappahannock Choral Society.
Right.
It'll be a fun night to just hear music on the grounds of Belmont.
Hear music, see some art in the galleries, enjoy a nice meal from one of our area food trucks, and I'm sorry, don't ask me who's going to be there because I forget. We have different ones that will appear. And then
somebody will be there with food.
Sodexo, our UMW food service, is our agent for getting some of the local craft beers there, so you can see some of those examples. So yeah, that is this coming Thursday the 10th, and then looking ahead later in the month, as we mentioned, August 20th, which is a Sunday, we have the Blooming History Program at James Monroe Museum at 10 a.m. That's the bookbinding, flower arranging program.
Right.
And then in September, October, and November, our Books at Belmont series, which if you go online, particularly if you go to the Facebook pages for each of the museums, you'll be able to get event information and find out more about those and other programs that are coming up.
So a lot of good stuff coming up, but especially this week. Hopefully, on Thursday the weather looks good for the Rappahannock Choral Society, and that will be something to take in. And again, with Books in Belmont and Blooming History, and the holidays aren't that far away, and there's always good stuff for the holidays.
Oh yeah, be a lot more to talk about later about what we're doing there at both places.
I will brush up on and will not make that mistake of calling it a video.
Yes,
of Gary Melchers.
I'm glad I could be here one last time as your guest.
We'll find a new. I always thought that Jared would be a much better
much
show.
Anybody, and Darren, our new guy Sam McKelvey, just bring all them in.
We'll do them. They won't
the ash heap of history. Yes,
they won't correct the host.
Yes, don't. note to myself: never correct host on air.
He's always right.
Got it,
Scott. Thank you so much again for what you provide the community. The UMW museums are jewels in the community, and take them in and make sure, and especially like you mentioned earlier in the show, when you've got family coming in for whether it's summer vacations or for the holidays, come on by and see some of this stuff because they will appreciate it and talk it up.
Thank you very much, Ted. Appreciate it.
Scott Harris is the executive director of UMW Museums. Town Talk powered by Stafford Tourism this morning. For information on events and activities, visit tourstaffordva.com. Thank you for listening. We will talk to you in the morning.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. The Glenn Beck program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA, focused on Fredericksburg.